Hello and welcome to another Woodshop Podcast with Mike Coffey of Coffey Custom Builds, Daniel Dunlap of Daniel Dunlap Woodworks, and Peter Kapar of Petrie's Workshop. You can find us all, as well as the podcast, on Instagram and YouTube.
Welcome to episode 149 of another Woodshop Podcast, where this week's guest will show us that if you follow these five easy steps, you can blow up on YouTube too. He started his channel almost exactly 1 year ago with four videos and grew it to almost 250,000 subs in a year.
What?
Less than a year. Yeah. And, you know, Dwight D. Eisenhower Boulevard was taken, so he did go with Lincoln Street Woodworks. John Cesar is here.
Hey, John's here. Guys, before John speaks, I'm going to interrupt, and I need to mention our sponsor.
Rhode Island.
Ethnic Sandwiches in Nebraska. No, I want to say a big thanks to our patrons real quick. We didn't get any new patrons this week. Shame on you.
I'm sorry.
You should be embarrassed.
It's because I wasn't here
talking to the audience.
It's because I wasn't here last week.
It's not you. It's not you. This falls entirely on the audience, Dan. They needed to become patrons. It's
okay.
Their fault.
Okay.
They can't be doing this. This isn't
I was
going
to fall
show.
On the sword.
As we were explaining to John, we make almost negative $5 per episode on this thing. So if you don't sign up, no. But big thanks to our VIP patrons. That's Alexander Copajohns, Bill Burkle, Braden with Little Bug, Daniel Bryson, Jake Miller, Justin with Calvary Creations, Christian Tung, Malcolm at Bossa Nova Woodworks, Matt Maynard, Melinda Coons, Michael Flickinger, Michael Lydon, Scott Holland, Square Splinter, Steve Latarola, and that's actually it. So thanks to all our VIP patrons.
That list is getting pretty long, though.
Yeah, it's a pretty big VIP patron list. Thank you to you guys. Thank
Remember
you
so that one much. Week when it was like 60 people? Remember
yeah, that? I may and have had the wrong button. Well, actually, I definitely
we're
had the
reading
wrong
everyone.
Yeah, I read everyone who's ever been a VIP patron for the last 3 years. That was funny. Huh?
It just goes to show us how many have dropped off. Ooh, this is bad. Exit.
Man, at one point we had 140 VIP patrons. Okay. No, anyway, I rudely interrupted John. He has to tell us everything about his life, starting from birth to 5 minutes ago.
Let's go.
John, who are you? What's your backstory? What's your origin story? Who did you fight?
What are your hard stances on states? I want to hear this.
Yeah, what do you feel about states that are imposters of islands? Go. Yeah.
Rhode Island sucks. Done.
Hey, you said it.
How'd I do?
It's great.
That was good.
Beautiful.
We got to clip
Beautiful.
That audio.
Pete, also.
Yeah, we got to mark it explicit.
What did I do?
Hype intro. That guy sounds great. Sadly, it's been 2 years since I started my YouTube channel.
Oh, wait. I thought it was. Oh, I'm so sorry. Whatever.
No, don't you know don't what? Apologize. I loved
lied.
It.
I thought it was.
All of Pete's hype stories are based on hearsay.
I thought it was 2020. My apologies. I know your Instagram's 2 years old. I thought your YouTube was a year.
No, again, Mick, actually, let's just. Forget I said that. Cut that out.
Let's roll with it.
Other John sounds
alive.
Even better.
It's not a lie. Yeah. He's been doing this for 1 month. What's your excuse, America and Rhode Island especially? Get your crap together.
Worst state.
The total boat's cool, though. They're in Rhode Island, I think.
Yeah, they are, I think.
Yeah.
They are. That's so is Providence. I mean, I've only been to Rhode Island once in Providence. It was
Sorry
the most boring experience of my life. It was so boring. It was literally nothing going on. But it was cool. It was like a... You know, one of the New England fishing towns or whatever. Everything was just, you know.
You wear a turtleneck?
And chain. I wore turtleneck and chain. Listen to Lonely Island. It was amazing.
All right. Well, John, I'm sorry I screwed up your intro. I'm sorry I lied. I'm sorry I embellished. I'm sorry that I did a clickbait of intro.
Ooh.
So, you know. But it's on like three, it, on theme. So anyways, give us your elevator pitch. Who the hell do you think you are? Go.
So, I am John. Hailing from the formerly great state of Rhode Island, I found out that it sucks on this podcast earlier in the night.
You're welcome.
Your words, not ours.
I am a woodworker who now lives in South Carolina, and when I'm not pretending to be good at woodworking, which I'm not, I make YouTube videos, and have done that for the last couple of years, and it's now...
At least two, from what I understand.
At least two.
Ballpark. Still
my
impressive.
Math is correct.
Listen, still impressive.
And now that's what I do to feed myself and my family. I make videos on the internet. What a world we live in.
So this is your full-time gig?
Yeah, this is it.
Wow.
You don't even have an OnlyFans channel?
I have that on the Instagram. Not linked to YouTube, but yes. Get that going.
Oh, is it linked? Is it like a link chain or what's that called?
The link tree.
Link tree.
Linktree. Ethnic links.
Link shrub. Ethnic links. Oh God. Don't go to that website, everyone. That's a bad idea. Cool. That's so what made you get on YouTube? I mean, what was the the impetus to get onto? Oh, I'm sorry, Pete.
No, that's that's literally the same question.
No. what was the impetus for what? I mean, what was the thing? What was like, I'm gonna go try YouTube. What was that?
Good question, Pete. So
save Dan some editing time.
I don't have a great backstory for this. I'm gonna try and condense it because it's a little bit of a longer story. So rewind to COVID.
This is a four-hour podcast. We got time.
We got time. Right.
I don't know if you knew that or not. Might be new information to you.
It was like year two when I was born. Things were really changing in my life. No, so we go back to COVID, and I got furloughed right at the start of the lockdown, like a lot of people. My wife got furloughed maybe, I don't know, 3 weeks after that. So I found myself with a lot of free time and no income. So I started selling my work for the first time ever. I was doing commission builds because prior to that, I was just building for fun. Friends and family and all of the Craig Jig things that we needed in our house, I could pocket hole anything together. I was a champ. And I was lucky. I went back to work, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 months later. But what that taught me, A, I'm not so great at woodworking and I don't like selling things to people, but I do like the idea of another revenue stream. So I happen to be sitting, I do like money. So I'm sitting on the couch, I don't know, let's call it December, and I watched the infamous video from Travis at Shop Nation. I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it was...
No.
Travis has a video that highlights how much he made on YouTube.
Oh yeah, I've seen that actually, yeah.
It's a great video, a really good breakdown. So I said, I like money, I'm somewhat good at woodworking, I think I could do this. So that was the, I guess, jump start to, hey, I should try this, and... Fast forward 2 months later, and then the channel starts. So I credit it all to Travis in all sincerity. That video was the reason. And also that's... getting furloughed from a job and realizing that you're just another line
cog
item.
In the wheel.
Blessing in disguise, in a way.
Yeah. Another number.
Yeah, that seems like COVID started a lot of things for a lot of different people. Like the idea of at any time... something could come along and halt everything in the world or in the country and change. It kind of really made people, it forced a lot of people to go, I need to maybe be able to do things for myself and not work for the system. So, I mean, I'm one of those people. I didn't do the same thing, but I mean, that's one of those things where it was like, yeah, I mean, things can just change over a period of 2 weeks, everyone's lives changed. I mean, it was wild.
Basically.
Go ahead. What was the phrase?
I was saying, like, what was it? What were they saying before? It was like stop the spread, or what was that? What that first 2 weeks when we were locked down? What was it?
Stop the spread.
Slow the curve or something.
Flatten the curve.
Slam the curb.
Curb stop the.
Yeah, I don't know.
While they curb think of that, Sean, why don't you answer this? So you were already doing commissions while working your other job at the time?
No, I was not. I was just doing the job. So my previous job required a significant amount of travel. I was one of the few remote workers. It was an office position technically. So I was flying back and forth to Boston, I don't know, let's call it 3 times a month at a minimum.
Boston.
And didn't have time for commissions. But obviously after you get furloughed and you can't leave your house, that opens up time to do commissions. And I learned
a lot
of hard lessons.
Amazing how much time that opens.
Yeah. You already had tools and stuff? You had something?
Oh, yeah. I had been... Let's building for like, let's call it 7 years-ish.
Dabbled.
Yeah. So I'd been dabbling.
That's good.
Well, I don't know if that could be a lie because I didn't see any content beyond 2020. So I think you're lying.
I agree. I made it all.
If you don't post it on the internet, clearly it never happened. That's what
I've
been
awesome.
Told.
That's awesome. It was nice that, you know, you hear so many of these stories of woodworkers like going full time or figuring out that they can support themselves doing commissions or content or a combination of the two, and it's because they have this fallback. They had a skill. It wasn't just like I got furloughed from a job and now like, well, where else can I be a substitute teacher or, you know, an accounts payable manager or something? Like you actually had like a marketable skill. So that's awesome that you were able to jump into that. How was that transition when you were doing that?
transition to doing commissions or?
Yeah, like, was it like you just said, you know what, I'm going to do it, and you just jumped in and started doing it, or did it take a while? Did you have to like build it up? Because a lot of people are looking to take the leap. At least a lot of our listeners, they, you know, the going full time is the dream. So like, yeah. Obviously it wasn't your dream way of doing it, but like, how did that process look for you?
Yeah. So the commission thing was basically, I snapped my fingers when I realized that I needed to bring some money in one day. And I saw a video on YouTube. I don't know if anyone's seen Izzy Swan's modern Adirondack chair. That's not really an Adirondack chair. It's just a modern outdoor chair. And I thought, oh, I could sell a bunch of chairs right now. People are sitting outside with nothing to do. It's a really fun build, pretty complicated, or you can make it as complicated as you want. Right. I also learned that never do chairs as a commission, especially in a shop that's not set up to reproduce chairs in any capacity. That was a hard lesson to learn.
Mike can speak to that.
Yeah. So that was a tough pill to swallow. I definitely didn't make a lot of money during my commission time, but it was really quick, Pete. I'd used Facebook Marketplace, which I think was still a thing then. I haven't done commissions in 2 years, so it sounds like that's not really a place where you can go and market your work anymore unless you want to get lowballed. Hey, can you sell this for $5 to me, please? So the chairs are cool looking, though. I posted them on Facebook Marketplace, got a bunch of bites, started selling them, and then I did some other different types of build, tables and whatnot. And again, fortunately, that was only 4 months of time, and then I was done.
Awesome. Nice.
Wow. Well, nice, I mean, so now you're doing, obviously you said, well, did you say on the podcast when you left your full-time job, you said before the show, was this, I mean, in the last few months, right?
Yes, I'm probably, let's call it less than a month in at this point in time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Of being a full-time content creator.
That's the title, officially.
Yeah. Officially.
On a tax form.
That's what it says.
On the LinkedIn now.
LinkedIn, yeah. Yeah. Owner, operator, boss, CEO. Yeah.
So then it's hard to like gauge 4 weeks in, yeah. But I mean, sorry, Dan, were you going to ask?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, is it, what are your thoughts? Initial 4 week thoughts of being a content creator.
Would you recommend?
Full time. Yeah.
What have you learned?
I hate it. Yeah, what have you?
So you guys know this because you either have a side business or it's your main business, or if you've done both at one point in time. When you're doing two jobs at once, and one is your hobby and one's your job, the hobby tends to take most of your focus and all of your brain power. It's the thing that you can't shut off, even though you really want to or you should. So in a sense, I feel like I've been doing two full-time jobs for the better part of 2 years at this point in time. So is anything different for me? No, because again, I feel like I've been doing this in every waking moment when I wasn't doing my other job. Now I just have even more time to focus on it, which is better for me. What I am learning to do, and I am by no means perfect at it, and it's something I'm really focusing on for the rest of the year, is how do you actually stop this? Meaning, because I'm at home all the time, how do you turn off the job and then turn on family time, for instance? Put the phone away, like be present with the kids and all that. Because that was a major reason too for leaving my job, was how do I get a lot of my time back? So I don't have a great answer or solution for it yet, because I continue to find myself in this perpetual wheel of, oh, I won't even work on the weekends. But last weekend, I worked all weekend finishing up a video.
And before we get too in-depth with that, I think we have a question that pertains to that a little bit.
Ooh.
I have a question I want to throw your way. What do you think was part of the success of growing your channel so fast over 2 years, Pete? What do you think?
My defense, YouTube showed 1 year for the oldest video.
What do you think that was? Because like we'd mentioned, I mean, a lot of people, you know, strive for that. You know, that's the dream. Do you think you just hit the YouTube lottery? Did you actually like go into this with a really solid plan, or was it something you kind of like stumbled into, like, oh, this is working, I'm just going to keep doing that?
So I'd say the biggest advantage I have is that no one understands the value of India click farms and how quickly you can buy views and subscribers. I don't know why people just don't do that. It's simple.
It's like $10.
Yeah. Now, so a little backstory on my previous life. I started in sales. Then I was a category brand manager. I did go-to-market strategy, and then I actually finished as the head of product. So a lot of what I learned and was beaten into my head over the period of 8 years at my last employer directly translates to a YouTube strategy and a side of YouTube that most people generally don't ever even consider or think about. So I eat, breathe, and sleep audience profiles or consumer profiles, customer profiles, finding gaps in markets and then developing products for that gap in a market. So I think a lot of people, when they go into YouTube, it's, oh my God, what is the content? How do I optimize this content? And that's not at all what I think about. It's where was the gap in woodworking? How do I fill that gap? And then how do you keep hammering that home over and over again? So when I decided to start the channel, it was, let's call it end of December-ish when I watched the Travis video. I actually didn't launch it until, it's coming up on the 2-year anniversary in a week or so. So 3 months. And that was definitely learning to film and edit because I didn't know that. But it was a lot of research behind the scenes, a lot of planning, a lot of figuring out what my quote-unquote brand is going to look like and feel like, again, because that's what I know how to do. And I attribute a decent amount of success to that. So I get this question pretty often, and it's like, what would you tell someone starting out? Or again, what do you think why do you think you succeeded? I think a lot of people go into it with the wrong expectations because they hear just go out there and press record, you'll figure it out on your own. I mean, it's fine, but probably it's going to take you a long time to stumble through that. Instead, if you actually put a plan together, you figure out all the answers to who my audience is, who my like ideal consumer or customer profile is, and how do you craft content for them, I can promise that you will 10x your time figuring all that out versus just stumbling through the first 30 YouTube videos on your own, because that's the things that you're going to figure out in the first 30 YouTube videos. And you don't need to.
Yeah, you're still under 30, right? You're like 20 something?
Yeah, I think like 20, maybe 25-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing, man.
Thank
Crushing
you.
It. How much would you, if I had a checkbook right now, how much would you sell your channel for right now?
Oh.
I'm just kidding. What? What kind of things were you seeing? I mean, the average woodworking channel, what were those gaps that you were noticing from your standpoint?
I was fortunate because the biggest gap that I noticed was something that somewhat comes naturally to me. I think you guys can pick on it just from the brief conversations we've had. I like to get to the
Rhode
point.
Island hate.
Yeah. I definitely don't belabor anything. So there's a lot of people who, for whatever reason, and I don't even think they realize they're doing it, like to just drone on and on and on a YouTube video. So it's not concise in any capacity. And I've always felt like when I'm watching a video, I want you to be respectful of my time. It's a two-way street. So that was the number one thing. It's like, all right, if I can just make this very succinct, which is something that I somewhat pride myself on, that's a big win for me. And then I felt like there was also a humor gap missing. There's a lot of guys who are really funny who do stuff, but they all have a different shtick than I have, right? Like Jason's more slapstick. Salamoni just has these really dry, quick one hitters every once in a while. I felt like I could combine a couple of those things into a pretty unique style of content.
Dry slapstick.
What's that?
Dry slapstick comedy.
Yeah.
My favorite.
Yeah.
Hey, it works, man. It's working. It's engaging. And yeah, your most of your videos are about like 15 to 20 minutes or like 10 to 20 minutes. I feel like, I've definitely been seeing a lot more longer videos, which I get it. Cause obviously you're ad revenue and all that stuff. And you know, if it's engaging, it's engaging. I'm going to keep watching it. And Salamoni just has a way of like putting you in a trance. Before you know it, you just finished a 40-minute video, like while you're sanding or something. So I get that too, but it's nice to get some engaging, straight to the point stuff as well. So I appreciate that.
I have noticed that, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's what I appreciate about you.
Yeah, YouTube when I started was all about like 9 to 12 minutes. That was the sweet spot. And like you said, Pete, right now the trend longer is better. Obviously, don't just make a video long to make it long, but you look at the guys who are just crushing it right now. They won't put a video out unless it's at least 20 minutes.
Soon they're going to be dropping like one episode of a season every week. It's going to be an hour and 30 minutes. It's Netflix or something. Part one is table build.
That just goes to...
I mean, it's because... Go ahead, Dan, sorry.
I was just going to say that just goes to show you like how quickly things can change on YouTube. I mean, before you know it, like Pete just said, you know, the audience might want an hour-long video, or it could switch the other way and everybody could kind of like want 3-minute videos. I mean, who knows what's going to track?
Yeah. It's really nice to see
that. Like what the algorithm wants though, right?
Yeah.
Not so much what the people want. I mean, I mean, now it makes sense that the longer videos are
Well, isn't the algorithm basically the people?
But probably.
It's different.
I would say that Google definitely utilizes the algorithm to get its money out of everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why the longer videos are doing well, because there's more chance for them to put more ads in there and more ad revenue for them. And that's why they want people on the platform longer. So these videos with like these quick starts and these catchy titles and thumbs that are immediately like the hook right out the gate, and then keep them going. I mean, John's, like you said, John keeps things concise. There's no like mumbling on, going on and on about the same thing. It doesn't give it all the time it needs, and that's it. Move on to the next thing, does really well. And that's like being able to do that is important. That's,
but it is really hard. Refreshing to see like John, your perspective on this. And then like, you know, we have had other people on here that their goal right now is to throw as much, like, you know, Eric Spensley, his strategy right now is throw thumbnails out the window, throw titles out the window just to grow, because the numbers are telling him this will grow. And, you know, yes, he has some like kickback from people about that, but you can see all these different ways of channels growing. Like for some people, long form video works. For some people, quick video works. For some people, 5 minutes or less video works. Some people don't even do like, you know, ad reads or whatever. They just throw in the little banner ads and that's it. Some people do full, you know, mid-roll reads, plus they throw in all the banners or whatever. So like all these strategies are working. It's all for different people. It's not, there's no one way to do it that's right for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I would say that there's probably overarching themes that everyone could apply to their channel. As far as the actual tactical execution, like you're saying, Pete, that'll vary from channel to channel depending on A, what you want to get out of it, and then B, what your actual content style is, right? Like Eric's hyper-focused on growth right now. I don't know how terribly sustainable it is, but it's definitely working, and kudos to him for doing it.
I mean, Eric's great, but I feel like this is going to... Well, I don't know. I'm not an expert, but I feel like his title method is going to really hurt him in the long run, and it's going to be really hard to get past it once he hits that wall. Like he's losing trust with his audience because they don't know what the videos are about. They don't know. I mean, and like I said, Eric's a great guy, but I feel like that is going to become a thing that he's having this great growth and great, you know, great for him. But I feel like once he hits that wall, it's going to be so hard to go past that wall after.
But that happened with people with shorts too. Like people were growing like crazy. Like Keith Johnson was one. He was blowing up with shorts, but then his entire demographic was completely thrown off when he was providing metrics to brands. It was not the people they wanted. It was not the crowd they wanted, not the region that they wanted or whatever.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, yeah, most of his audience, like 66% was Rhode Island.
Yeah. And they
the entire
don't want
state
none of that.
Was watching.
Yeah. Festival yes. wanted none of that.
It was public access
no one
TV
wants
in
to
Rhode Island.
Money there.
Just all, yeah. Public access television. It was just somebody scrolling through his feed on the local channel.
Look, man, we really probably should clarify that we have nothing against Rhode Island. No, it's just a random joke.
Great state. Although, doesn't Jackman live there?
He's in Massachusetts, I believe.
He's very close to Rhode Island, though.
He's so close, he's stinking up the place.
Mike, to put a bow on that, look, I really like Eric, too. I consider him a friend.
Yeah.
Eric's a smart enough too. Guy that once it slows down, he'll figure out what to do to pivot. I'm a person that believes, though, that you need to never lose the trust of the audience, and I would put a higher value on that than I would overall subscriber count. Subscriber count to me at this point is completely irrelevant. It's view count is the only thing that matters.
Right.
Yeah, right on.
Yep. Yeah, getting in front of and keeping those eyes on that thing is all that matters. That's awesome. This has been a really cool deep dive, and we'll get more into this for sure, but let's jump into our first segment of the show. That's a little one called What's on My Bench. What's on my bench? That's where we talk about what's on our bench. It's a very descriptive title for a segment. No, John, what you got going on this week? What you working on? What project videos? What you got going on? Hit us.
Rare occurrence in the Lincoln Street Woodworks world where I'm actually building something. I'm generally just yapping.
Gross.
Yeah. I like to talk about woodworking.
Who even are you?
Disgusting.
Faker.
I decided at some point I should probably build something like other than a birdhouse. So This week we are building some
Queen Anne armoire.
Yeah, an armoire. Went from birdhouse to armoire. You guys remember when Midjourney, the AI development, was like all the rage? All of a sudden, then it's going to start developing designs for you or projects.
Yeah,
yeah.
I did that maybe 2 months ago, trying to be one of the cool kids too, and I typed in all of the buzzwords: mid-century modern, sleek, minimalist, chair, outdoor, and it basically gave me a really dumbed down version of a classic Z chair. But I thought it would be a cool build to show people how to tackle something that looks terribly complicated, but it's actually a pretty easy build for the most part. So I'm working on that. Hopefully I have that video out in a couple weeks. It's been a fun build though.
Nice.
Sweet. That's awesome.
I think so that's a really hook, cool concept.
Is the hook that you're using AI? I mean, the project isn't the video, right? The video is that you used AI to help generate the idea?
No, that I'm actually going to mention it in passing for about, I don't know, maybe 2 seconds, make a funny bit about it, and then move on. It looked like David Picciuto tested that a little bit, had some success, didn't have some success. I don't know if it's a strong enough topic to devote an entire video to. There's a lot more teaching that can actually go into the chair, was my thought.
Good. That's cool. No, I'm pleasantly surprised that I was wrong about that. I'm glad to watch that. It'll be cool to watch that video. Is that all you got going on right now?
That's it.
Pete?
Was I ready? I'm ready. Yes, I'm definitely not Dan. Stalling. No, I've got it.
Was I ready? I'm ready.
I can't believe it's Thursday, first of all. It caught me off guard today.
Yeah, it usually comes after Wednesday.
I don't know why they change it every week. It's really rude.
It's Biden.
Yeah.
Biden. Blame him.
Thanks, Biden. They like week late savings time. So dumb. So I'm working on
he
stuff.
He lives in Rhode Island, I think.
Yeah, he does. That's, you know, you can't trust those guys. I'm working on stuff for, I have a craft fair on Saturday. I thought it was Saturday and Sunday. Turns out it's just Saturday. I'm actually really relieved about that because, like, we came back from Workbench Con. I was wrapping up a job for something else and then went right into cutting board mode. And I just haven't had as much time to get in the shop as I wanted to this week. Work's been kind of crazy. And Tuesday we did our taxes, which is always super fun. But, you know, we talk about, like, get a CPA. I'll talk about taxes for a second. But, like, get a CPA, someone is competent, interview them. Make sure you like them and they give you good information, that they don't make you feel dumb or like you don't know what you're talking about. Because guess what? They work for you. I can't stress that enough. And we really love our CPA. He, you know, we came into the office and we really didn't need to. We could have just emailed everything over. But I finally sat down with him and was like, tell me the categories you need to know that we can get like the best returns and stuff. We literally went over for 2 hours everything that he needs to see. I gave him all the numbers and everything. And it was really nice because for next year, I have a sheet that I can just fill in the numbers and just hand it over to him. And it's all going to be golden. So really excited about that. I'm also really excited because we were talking about just like, you know, being able to depreciate your tools more or less depending on, you know, how much you need to help you out. If you have a crazy tax bill, maybe you depreciate your tools more. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, get a CPA. I don't know if I mentioned that. So highly recommend that. Ours is fantastic. He's really good. If you're in Jersey and you need one, let me know. He's in Caldwell. But did that. But the problem with that was basically Sunday night, Monday, and Tuesday were shot because there was like final prep for taxes and getting everything ready because we did not finalize all our stuff. Wednesday, I was working in Manhattan. I was actually working in Brooklyn all day. So by the time I got home, day was a wash too. So today I got a little bit of work done, wrapped up the cutting boards and a couple little projects. And tomorrow I was like, you know what? I'm going to take the day off. I need to get ready for this thing. I don't want to just like clock out of work at 4, scramble late into the night, and then have to be there at 7 a.m. to start setting up, which way too early for setup. But anyways, if it's half as good as the last one, it'll be worth it. So I'm pretty excited. We got a lot of cool, fun little laser projects and other things. I didn't get to do a lot of CNC stuff, but we have some more craft fairs this year that we're going to be doing. We're probably going to try to do about 4 every year. So that's going to be fun. And it, you know, brings in a little extra income, and it makes stuff that we can throw at the Etsy shop too. And Emma's basically writing up all the listings. She's going to be taking photos, and we're going to try to throw everything up on there and try to grow, you know, Etsy a little more because we need that extra income with Emma coming on. So it's going to be really exciting. I cannot wait for her to come on full time. I need help. Like, now that I see what I can do when I have support, I am like desperate for the extra support. Like Dan, it's like when you're, you know, when Isaiah left and you were like, I literally can't do this right now. I need help for like all these little things that like take up so much of your time. You know, for some people, like Mike, you know this, you have guys in your shop. Sometimes it's as simple as like, you have to run out to Home Depot. You have to take care of this thing. You have to take delivery for this item and you can't be in multiple places at once. And that stuff just burns your time. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice to have that extra support. Even though she's not in a shop, she's taking care of so many administrative things that I just do not have time for. So,
when does she officially come on full time?
End of June. She's following a school year.
So you got some time.
You get some time, but it's nice. Like in 2 weeks, she has a spring break. So we're going to be tackling a bunch of projects. Spring break! Miami Beach! Yeah! So we're going to be making, crafting in Miami Beach. It's going to be great. Mm. But yeah, so that's that. This week's been just hell getting ready for that and getting everything wrapped up. I'm excited for next week because I can actually breathe a little bit and work on some house projects. So that's that. And I wrote up a script for my next YouTube video. So I'm really excited for that because I'm going to be getting back in the game. It's going to be the slab table, the coffee table. Very boring. It's a slab. I got it. I want to make it into
a
coffee
table.
What's the story? The story is she bowed. She cupped. She twisty and curvy. And we're gonna we're gonna make her real flat, like a girl from Rhode Island. I said it.
Jeez,
poor Rhode Island.
Man, really in the paint on this one. That was the line. Man,
but that's all I got.
People in this country.
Coffee. What do you got, man? What's going on?
Well, I met some lovely people from Rhode Island this week. And they were wonderful. That's all I have to say about that. I'm going to try to negate some of Pete's hate speech.
Try to bring it back.
Yeah, I'm going to reel it back a little bit.
John started it.
No, we got a busy week, as usual, over here. I was hoping to actually... I actually wasn't going to be on the show this week, but ended up being on the show this week. So
it's because you missed me.
Yeah, I missed Dan so dang much.
You can say
no, we
it.
Had... We had a, I missed Dan. Yeah, we had a delivery in the Bay Area this week. We had another delivery somewhere. We did another one. I can't remember. There's two deliveries this week. And then I got to get this other stuff done. But anyway, got a whole big old fat trailer load of slabs that we flattened for a slab yard. And those are getting delivered tomorrow. And I'm picking up a whole another trailer load of slabs to work on that. I finished the dining set for my Westview collection is done. So I've got we've got all the processes done for that. So now I've got to start getting with someone to figure out how to market that thing and get that in front of eyeballs on the internet. And then Etsy kind of went weird. It went crazy this last week.
I thought you closed that down.
No, I never closed it. I just raised all my prices except for my digital stuff because the digital sales just keep going up over there. Like digital,
right.
I'll get like 10 to 15 or 20 a day. I mean, it just keeps going. But I raised all my prices. But like randomly, I'll have like a spurt every once in a while. And it was like $4,000 in random boards this last weekend went through on sales. I'm not running any sales. It was just like random orders. Like I had a bunch of those, you know, the stupid Lego trays I've been doing for a million years. Yeah. Those and then those Farkle and Yahtzee boards.
Block just, person trays.
Yeah. Brick builder trays. Not block person.
Mike.
Yeah. Hashtag no Lego. Don't sue me. No, we had a bunch of those go, but, that was weird. I'm trying to like look through like what I've done this week, honestly. So we're just working on some stuff right now. We delivered a vanity. That's right. The bathroom vanity. We delivered that on Monday. Got that delivered and just been working on that. And me and Peter started filming a new video.
Yeah, it went
YouTube
really well.
Channel. Yeah, thanks, Pete.
Okay, how
that
many
joke's
times
funny
you
every week.
It gets better, doesn't it?
It's kidding. So
John,
good.
It's not me. It's a different Peter.
Good joke, Pete.
Peter came over and we filmed. Yeah, it's you can't tell because it's bad. Peter came over. We started filming. I'm building a mini benchtop Mox and Vice. So I'm just kind of comparing my. Really, the video story is about I made this like match fit edge of bench.
Oh yeah,
holding system years ago, and that video has been out for a million years. That has become, in my shop, less and less valuable as a hold-down system. It just isn't great. It was great when I first started using it. Now it's just not good anymore. So I've been wanting to build this Mox and Vice for coming on 2 years. I bought the hardware 2 years ago and I never built the thing. So we filmed that video, all of it except for like the closing part, which we're going to film on Saturday. And then we filmed another video a couple weeks ago on introduction to the Shaper Origin. That is an unsponsored, unsolicited video. But I just want to, I've been getting people asking me about the Origin a lot because I show it in my content so much. So we're just showing the basics of what that thing can do. So, and then, yeah, that's kind of been my week. It's just been kind of real busy. Oh, what's up, Dan?
A quick question. You said that that's not sponsored or anything like that, but have you ever, or this goes for anybody here, especially John, have you ever made content with the thought that maybe I can get it sponsored, maybe I'll shop it to so-and-so and maybe they'll sponsor it?
I'm not going to make a video to shop because they know the video is made and they'll just be like, no, we're not going to pay you for something you already made. You're just going to put it up.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a thing people do.
It is, actually. Casey Reeves talked about it.
Yeah, that's right. Casey mentioned it. Yeah.
He'll make a video and then he'll hit up like Craig or Bessie or somebody.
Oh, like he formats it in a way where it isn't dialed towards one brand.
No, but like you guys want in on this and he'll actually, like, I've never thought to reach out to a brand after a video has been made, but it works for some people.
Just kind of wondered. Anyway, yeah, I forgot about that. Continue. Sorry.
I am doing a desk build and I had a phone call today. Completely separate with the, it's a completely separate conversation with the brand. I brought up the build and they, so kind of, I guess it's kind of the same, but we didn't build it yet. But they said they'd like to sponsor the video. So that kind of, I guess, but it's not the same. We didn't actually make the video yet. We didn't try to shop the video. So
yeah, that's different.
The seed has been planted.
Yeah. It's nice. No, I mean, they're sponsoring it. I mean, they're sponsoring the video. Yeah, so, no, I mean, I mentioned that I'm doing the build and they're like, hey, we'd like to be a part of that build. So that's, I mean, kind of.
I didn't build
the video around trying to sell it to. Yeah, that's
after we finished the ones on the bench, John. I'd actually love to hear your like strategy for sponsors too.
Okay,
I'll ask you that question as if somebody asked it.
Put a pin in that one. We'll come back.
And then yeah, just kind of chugging along right now. Oh, that was the thing. The new CNC. So I had it got really busy over the winter time, like really busy. The company, we were just so slammed here and we needed all the floor space we could possibly have in here. And I just couldn't get the CNC. So I had to re-up my loan because it had been 90 days since I got approved for the loan for the new CNC. So we got all that done and we're almost done. It looks like I'm going to be given the green light tomorrow to get that thing ordered up. It'll be here in a couple weeks. So going to be getting the Laguna Smart Shop 2 with the 8-tool auto changer and the vacuum bed. It's going to be a 12 horsepower spindle. It's a 15 horsepower vacuum pump. It's a monster.
So you're getting a third power line run to your property?
No, the whole thing will run off of 80 amps. So I've got it all ran. I already knew what the power requirements are. When I did the electrical, I had already wired for it. So,
nice.
So it's ready to go. I just have to switch out the breaker. The wire is already zero gauge wire. It's good to go. So we'll keep the Swift and we'll have the Smart Shop 2 in there. That's going to help a lot. We have, I've talked about it on the show, but I have the contracts with Room and Board. Those are starting to ramp back up again. And then there's another one that I've been negotiating for the last couple of months that I can't really talk about on the air, but, it's with another large national retailer and, that won't start till 2024. But when that does start, it's going to be crazy. So that's going to be significantly bigger than anything I've got with Room and Board.
Can't
right
wait
now.
To see those Walmart chairs.
It's going to be nice. Walmart. That's where the real money is.
Yeah.
Speaking of Walmart, your buddy Drew is getting some stuff in with Walmart, it looks like.
I did see that.
Barrymore?
Yeah, isn't that? No, Drew Witt. I was talking. He was helping me out with some thumb stuff this last week. We've been talking quite a bit. And it's, yeah, thumbs. We've been doing thumb stuff, Drew and I. Over the pants thumb stuff, don't worry.
I thought Walmart was an odd place to film a woodworking video.
There
but we'll
is the show title.
I mean,
Over the Pants Thumb
I
Stuff.
There it is. I would personally never go into a Walmart, much less work with
them. What? Are you kidding me?
For Drew.
It is the best entertainment. Anytime you're just in the middle of nowhere, go to Walmart.
People of Walmart.
It's amazing. Oh, better. Better. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Highly recommend.
No. Anyway, yeah. So we got the new CNC is probably going to be in pretty soon. I'm really excited about that, and I'm working on something with a new video with a company
I can't really talk about it right now, but we're working on a video with a company that will have some new dust collection in the shop that's going to be really helpful. We're actually going to be making video, not for my channel. It's actually going to be video for them and their marketing channel. So that's the nice thing about having a guy who does product videos. So that's really helpful. We're able to like, hey, we can do your marketing videos for you in my shop and not put it on my channel. And I don't feel like a shill. So anyway, that's what we got going on right now. Daniel, did you go?
Well, as most of you know, or maybe you don't.
Or just don't care.
Or just don't care. our spring break was actually last week. We drove down to Florida to go to Disney World like a bunch of bozos. Because let me tell you, that drive.
You did lose a bet.
I lost something. I basically kind of lost my mind on the way back anyway. That is a terrible, terrible, terrible drive. I used to hate driving across Nebraska and Iowa because it's just like flat nothingness. But that drive to Florida through Georgia and Florida itself, awful, awful. The traffic is just, I cannot.
Existent compared to Nebraska.
Driving to Nebraska is boring and wonderful, and I love it. Anyway, my family. My wife and kids actually went to Disney World, and I did not join them because I did that in 2018. And when I did it in 2018, I was like, that's it. I'm never doing this again. And I remained true to my word, and my wife and kids were actually okay with it. So I just hung out at the resort while my wife and kids went to the park. And they also went with my in-laws, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, and my wife's brother and his kids. So they all went. And yeah, they had a good time, I think. Anyway, came back. Well, track back a little bit. While I was at the resort, I got a text from Isaiah, and he said, hey, do you care if I come back early? And I was like, oh my God, this couldn't be better timing because I am swamped.
Yes, please.
With orders. Because when I came back from Florida, I had 111 orders in my queue.
And like 50 Etsy. Outstanding, like 50
overdue.
Already.
Oh my God. It was awful. So yeah, I'm so grateful to have Isaiah back in the shop with me. We're kicking ass already, taking names. And also, just today, an hour before we started the podcast, I had my second CNC delivered. Huge shout out to Onefinity. I reached out to them. I said, what can you do for me? I'm in desperate need of a second CNC. I'll even take a woodworker, like their smallest version. And they hooked it up. They hooked a brother up. I did have to give away my firstborn, but...
John can do it. He can handle it. Oh, no,
John's my secondborn. Oh. We're talking about Max. So anyways, yeah, that's here. We need to rock and roll that. We need to put it together. We need to build a table. We need to clean a space for it. It showed up a lot faster than I anticipated. So that's actually really awesome. I really, really need a second seat.
Dude, I feel like that CNC is going to become your like cornerstone of actually doing all the...
Yeah, because...
It's the size that you need, right?
A giant CNC because nothing that I'm selling on Etsy is like over, you know.
I'm curious to see
12.
How the dynamic changes. Like, I feel like the big CNC is going to become like the backup.
Right now, my plan for that CNC is to just have it run in bow ties, run stock. I went and bought a bunch of buckets. So what I was doing was I was putting bow ties and stuff in like these little trays, and they're not big enough. So like I'll fill them up and they're empty within a day. So
whoa.
I'm going to like start filling up 5 gallon buckets of bow ties. That way I could just pick through and I can send out what I need. And, you know, like 1 day or 2 days will be dedicated to cutting bow ties on that CNC. And then maybe the other 3 days it'll do inserts or something. I'm hoping that I can utilize that bigger CNC, the Journeyman, to cut out like bigger like furniture pieces that are shippable, like the slide tables and the side tables and maybe a chair or something. We'll see. Anyways, it's nice to have all that. We are getting caught up. We only have 16 of those slide tables left to cut. I started with 25. So we've knocked that out. I think that's pretty much it. It's been an eventful week.
How many orders do you still have?
I'm super grateful Isaiah's back. We've knocked it down to... So as we're doing them, obviously, they're still coming back in. So got to take that into account. I think there's still 68.
Wow.
Jeez, dude. According to my phone.
Dan, can I ask
question? Go ahead. Go ahead, John.
Sorry if it's redundant for everyone. What's your number one Etsy thing? Is it the bow ties or the plates, the zero clearance?
It's the zero clearance inserts now, for sure.
He's the insert king of Sarpy County. I don't know if you heard at WorkbenchCon.
Mm, interesting name. Okay. I've been meaning to order one, though. I was genuinely curious because it seems like...
John, don't order one. Just send me a message and I'll hook you up.
And he'll send you the invoice.
Can you put the insert king on it? Because that's really what I'm looking for.
The insert king?
Yeah, I'll personalize that for you.
All of them, Dan. Yeah. You need to get a little one of those stupid garbage lasers and put the insert king.
Or just a branding iron.
Needs to be your store. Yeah, that needs to be your store name on Etsy. The insert king.
Insert king.
I love it. I don't hate it.
Listen, John knows about marketing. He knows this.
Anyway. That's my week in a nutshell. This is me in a nutshell. How'd I get in this bloody nutshell? Sorry.
Look at the dad jokes. Oh my God. This is so great. It's such a good content. Anyways, Mike, we had questions.
Aren't you glad I'm back?
We did. We did, but you wanted to have John talk about something.
Oh.
And after the
work. Yes.
You know.
And John, question from our one of our listeners. It's
question
me.
From our
I
sponsors.
Listen to this podcast. Since this is a negative sum game with this podcast, I am also a sponsor because I'm paying to be here. But John, I'd love to hear, because we talked about working with sponsors and like how we find deals from, you know, brands. How do you handle brands? Like, you know, you talked about your success, and I don't think actually any of our listeners asked about this, but like obviously you have your ad revenue, but how have you found a conversation with brands? Like, what is your strategy? And what are you willing to share? What five things do we have to do to be millionaires?
Great question. I'll let you know when I figure out the millionaire thing. I'm still
waiting for the video.
Well, short. So on the sponsorship side, there's two routes you can go. There's endemic and non-endemic. Non-endemic, for anyone who's unfamiliar, that's...
Dan, Google it.
That's like a bespoke post, all of those nonsense things you see all the time.
Outside of the woodworking world, right?
Yeah, have nothing to do with woodworking, but we're a demographic that company's looking to hit. White males, age 40 to 60 with disposable income. That's
probably in Rhode
That's
Island.
Our wheelhouse. Yeah. I have found that the non-endemic side, while yes, you might get a little bit of chirpage from the comment section, actually is easier because it doesn't hurt the potential integrity of the video. And they also pay better than the endemic side. The challenge with doing a channel like mine, which is a lot of it is not review type, but it's informational, is that you start to blur the line between what's really your opinion and what's someone's paying you to have an opinion on. So I've stayed away basically from all endemic sponsorships because I like to have basically full autonomy to make whatever decision I want in the content. I don't need someone proofing what I say about their product. It's just way too valuable for me because I feel like that's what the audience connects with. So I know there's plenty of people who make a living doing just the endemic stuff and not worrying about bespoke post and Jackery, all the brands that I play with. It's just not something that is terribly interesting for me right now. I'll probably change though. I'm a creature of evolution. I like to be really stubborn and then I eventually come around.
That's an interesting take on that.
That was one of my biggest takeaways.
Usually you hear I like to stay on brand, so I like to keep my sponsors woodworking. So that's, I like that.
That was one it's of different. The biggest takeaways was the conversation with Suman.
Yeah.
But he's like, yeah, your woodworking companies are going to nitpick your video. They're going to want that ad read to be on brand. Dan, you were dealing with that with a certain orange tool brand or whatever company. But these other non-woodworking companies, they just want the ad read. If it's in there, they don't really care what else is in the video.
Now, Pete, the only challenge, I probably should have elaborated on this more.
Please do.
Is that if you're doing a non-endemic, an ad read in the middle of your video. And generally, they don't even let you go picture in picture. They want you to do a full cutaway because they have B-roll they want you to show and hit a little talking points. You're going to destroy your retention. So you just have to decide what's more important to you. Are you willing to trade off retention, which ultimately impacts the performance of the video? There's no doubt about that. For the monetary value of that. At this point in time, I'm willing to. I would love to not have to be in that position. But that's a very real reality of taking the non-endemic. If you were just casually talking about Craig throughout the video, which Craig is one of those people that pretty much lets you do whatever, you don't have to do an ad read, you're not going to impact their attention of your video. So that's up for to someone to decide what they want out of their video performance.
Nice. Yep. That's good insight.
Solid point.
I like it.
Pete, is that satisfying your question on that?
I'm satisfied. Dan's not.
I have something to add to this.
Go.
Because I'm curious as well. So what does a sponsorship look like to you? Are you having to, have you reached a point where you have to still hunt down sponsors, or are they coming to you first?
So I learned pretty early on, I think this was right after WorkbenchCon last year, and the trajectory of the channel was pretty good then. And the non-endemic, so keeps and whatnot, were starting to reach out to me, asking me to do ad reads. The problem is when you don't know where to even start on your rates, you're lost. So I reached out to some friends, one of them in particular, a fine fellow by the name of Keith Johnson, hailing from the great state of New Jersey,
Never heard of him.
Just get an agent because I was getting enough views there where it made sense. So I have someone who negotiates all of that. I don't have a lot of good answers for people because he's the one reaching out. He has all of the connections. I don't even touch that side of the business. When he gets something, he brings it to me. He knows what I will do and I won't do. It's like he won't bring me Raid Shadow Legends anymore. I'm not doing a video game.
Over the pants thumb stuff.
Yeah, over the pants thumb stuff. Yeah. I'm out. No tummy sticks for me. So yeah,
that's nice.
It is nice. I'm very fortunate to be in that position, and I have no complaints with how the whole thing has worked out for me.
Interesting.
That's awesome, man.
That's good advice. Good deal. Awesome. I love it.
Thanks for sharing, John.
Yeah, man, for sure. Thanks for sharing.
Mike, I know you have more questions, but can we jump into questions, please?
Yeah, I'm going to do some reads first so we can do these read-off questions real quick. Mix it up a little bit. Sometimes those go towards the end. First one's from Mary Sai from Kodamari Designs. Hey, friends, I was talking with Suman about the boundary between woodworking and content creation, and he mentioned that content creation can sometimes take some of the joy out of making. He doesn't consider himself a woodworker. Instead, he is a content creator that happens to woodwork. Would you agree with that? And if so, when did that switch happen for you, or are you able to maintain a balance between the two? Also, loved meeting you all at WorkbenchCon. Mike, we need a California meetup at some point. I'm going to throw this to Dan. Dan, what are your thoughts on this
one? I am definitely a woodworker first before a content creator, just because that's where, you know, the majority of my revenue comes from. I would like to be a content creator first, but I'm not at this point. So I don't know if I have any insights that are good here for Mary. But I'll bet you John does. John?
You want me to take this one, or Mike, you want to go?
Yeah. No, go ahead.
John, go.
Absolutely.
First of all,
else after. Yeah.
I met Mary at Workbench for the first time. She is fantastic and incredibly talented.
Great. Super nice.
Yeah, Mary's great.
So shout out to Mary. Good question, too. Yep. I think you have to pick one, and it's that old adage. I think Steve Ramsey's the one who came up with it, woodworker, content creator. I don't think you can be both, unfortunately. And if you look at the people who are hyper successful at content creation, outside of Mike Farrington, I'm not sure if there's anyone that runs a successful business. And I'm sure someone will correct me, but that's the only one that comes to mind. As far as taking the joy out of it, I haven't found it takes the joy out of woodworking. It definitely makes builds more painful, but I still enjoy the actual process. I've reached a point, though, and I'm not ashamed to say this. If woodworking went away tomorrow, I enjoy content creation so much that I'll find something else to make content about. And I'm totally okay with that. And yeah, it would suck to lose it as a hobby, but you know what? I'm very, very passionate about the business and the whole process of content creation right now.
Nice. Mike?
I think that... I agree with the thought that the content creation takes. So for me, I'm a woodworker. I run a furniture business. I love woodworking. Woodworking has changed my life in ways that I can't even properly put into words. It's brought joy and happiness to my life and a sense of meaning and value that I never saw for the first 34 years of my life. Woodworking means a great deal to me, and I feel I owe it a lot because of how much it's brought into my life. And that's about the best way I can sum up my feelings for woodworking. Content creation is the thing that brought me woodworking. Or I should say content is the thing that brought me woodworking. So content has a special spot in my heart as well, because that's where I learned it. I didn't have the opportunity or the option to go learn about woodworking in a traditional way through a mentor program or a school or anything like that. I learned about it on Instagram and YouTube. And that is where I found a community, specifically Instagram. And it's a community that I actually really care about. I don't particularly care about the platform these days. I don't really care about Instagram anymore. I find less and less that I care about it. I don't care about Instagram. I just don't. That has many factors involved in that. I think that trying to remember to set up my camera and my phone or my camera and do content is not something that I enjoy doing. I also have a fortunate situation where I have a cinematographer now, and it has made the opportunity to make content very feasible and something that I very much enjoy. And I'm also separating my content from my business. I am not making videos about client work ever again. It just won't be in my content. Well, not in my YouTube content. It'll still be in my Instagram stuff because I like to share the tips and tricks stuff. But the overall builds, for me, I'm very new. I've been on YouTube for years. I would say that I am really actually trying to figure it out in the last 4 months. And that's when Peter came on. And I'm really starting to like put brain, like my thought process to it and actually be intentional with when we're doing videos. And I'm trying to absorb information from a lot of people right now in every direction that I can. Every direction. Boom, boom, boom. Because for me, I don't like to do things unless it's going to lead to ultimately to success. I just don't like to waste my time unless there's going to be success there. I was doing that with YouTube. I was making content because I felt like, oh, I did Instagram and now I need to do YouTube because that's the progression. Well, that's not the case. The thing is Instagram needs YouTube needs a ton of mental time and a ton of thought process, and you really need to invest a lot into it to make it work. I have a team member now and a partner who helps me with that. That's Peter. That's not this Peter. That's Peter Lindsay, who I work with for the channel. And I am fortunate to be able to split the burden of content with another person while also being able to pull from the knowledge of the relationships of people that I have that are successful at YouTube. I'm always constantly listening to criticism and actively wanting to know what people think about what we can do with the channel to make it better. And whatever that means, better. That means everyone gives you a different answer to what better is. So for me, I'm actively seeking out how to separate my content from my business because they are completely separate things, and I find joy in making pieces of furniture for people. And I lose joy from making pieces of furniture for people when I'm making content about it. But if I'm making content around pieces for me or stuff I'm doing around the shop, I find a lot of joy in it. So that's how I'm doing it. That's the absolute longest way I could answer that question. So sorry, but that's like the best way I can sum it up, is that for me, I am a woodworker first. If I lost woodworking, I would be incredibly sad. And if I lost content, I'm finding that I would be also very sad about that, because I'm now in a way that I wasn't. So with Instagram, it always felt like doing drugs, because everything with Instagram, it's like it lasts for a very short time. It can go super high, super fast, and then it just tapers off, and you're always just kind of chasing that next viral video. Whereas with YouTube, I feel like I'm investing in a very good potential future with it. So for me, the idea of losing that content would also make me very sad. So I'm actually actively pulling myself out of my business and the day-to-day to focus more time into YouTube so that I can make that a success, because I want it to be a success. I will not stop running my furniture business. In fact, there's still another business that I want to start with it as well. I think that, and this is going to sound like I'm bragging, I think a lot of people don't have the capacity to do multiple businesses successfully. I think that I do. I just think that I have that capacity within me. I kind of go, and that's what I like to do. I like being under pressure, and I like going. You know, I think there are instances of people who can have successful businesses and content. I mean, April, Mike Farrington. I mean, there's examples of this. It's just not, it's the exception to the rule. And I agree with John on that 100%. Like, you got to focus on the thing that you want to do well. So
April's a great one. Forgot that.
Yeah.
Yeah. April crushes everything. But anyways, Mary, yeah, 100%. California Maker Meetup. As soon as I can get this new building done, we're having a huge thing out here. It's going to be great. So, Pete.
So, Mary, first thing I'm going to say is that, and this took me way, way too long to realize, especially having, heavy hitter friends like Dan and Mike who run their life as their woodworkers and they're doing content around that. And, you know, the concept of being a content creator or the term of going full time in quotes here, you know, we hear that a lot, means you're a full time woodworker, you're full time content creator. But like, I think, the most important thing that took me the longest to learn is that don't fall into a box or category. It took me years to realize that I can just call myself a maker and that's fine. I'm a maker. I'm not a woodworker. I work with wood, but I also work with metal and also work with 3D printing. And sometimes I'm designing stuff in CAD or whatever. That's not a feasible, tangible thing. But like, I love making things. I love figuring out how things work. And I do really like making content around it. So for me, first and foremost, I am a maker. No matter what, if YouTube went away tomorrow, whatever, I'm not going to stop making stuff. I'm not going to stop getting in a shop and figuring out how to make things better, how to tweak things, how to make a new tool, how to make whatever. Like, that's never going to go away. If woodworking went away tomorrow, I'm going to figure out how to make some other stuff. I just love creating. I love learning about stuff. I love gear. And don't think you have to fall into a category. You can just be whatever. You can just be very ambiguous about what you do. You can call yourself an artist and it really doesn't matter as long as it makes you happy.
That's what Jimmy does.
Yeah. That's literally Jimmy's whole thing is like, I just make. He's not even calling himself a maker. He just says, I make. Literally handed out stickers that says, I make at WorkbenchCon. I'm sorry, at a maker camp. Like, you don't, it takes us way too long to figure out that we don't need to fall into a category. You just do what you love. And if you do it well enough, or if you find a way to make it work, money will come and you'll be able to figure out a way to make money with it. So that's my two cents on it. It's like, you don't have to be a content creator first that happens to do woodworking. You could just be a maker or an artist or a content creator. And then the other thing comes with it, or you can be five things. You don't have to fall into a single category.
Thanks, Pete.
Yeah.
This next question is from Suman. It is directed directly at John. John, as a full-time content creator, how do you keep yourself on task and not get distracted? Also, how come Suman, I don't know why he's referring to himself in the third person, how come Suman was not involved in the patented hip thrust domino cameo? Is it because he did a 5mm domino stroke?
Please refer to him as the Suman.
Yeah, that's quite...
And Suman?
The.
Quite the question to refer to yourself in third person. Have you guys ever had that on the podcast?
All the time.
Nope.
A third person?
I don't know.
Yeah, the Paul Jackman does that all the time.
I'm so taken aback by the fact that he went third person. What are we even talking about here? Is 5mm stroke or how do I find time? I prioritize?
It's so, something about, yeah. How do you
keep yourself first, on first task one is how do you keep yourself on task and not get distracted by this question?
Yeah, exactly. This is an easy answer for me. I've always worked from home my entire adult life career. So I've always been remote. I'm able to just buckle down and get things done. I don't have a great
experience.
Answer. Yeah, I have experience. I don't have any insightful information to share for people. The only thing I can tell you is it helps if you leave your house in the morning and then come back to feel like you start your day. That's one little nugget for people. And other than that, I just come back and I get it done because I know I have to create content now. So as far as the hip thrust and your 5mm stroke, I'll take that up with Jason. That was his prerogative. But he was too short to fit into my video.
To our Rhode Island listeners, that's roughly a quarter of an inch. Yeah.
Your tripod didn't go low enough to get him in.
Yeah, exactly. It has a 5'5" minimum height requirement. Like the rides
must
at Disney.
Be this tall to ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, this first question.
Thanks for the question, Suman.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Probably from Rhode Island.
No, Dan, he's actually calling from Texas, or rode in from Texas while he's flying to Cali to see Cat's
Moses. It was just a joke. We don't really need his full
joke. Let's explain it. I'm doing all the states. Suman around the country.
Suman, where in the world is Carmen Suman? Okay, so the next question.
Suman San Diego.
It's an actual voicemail from voicemail from little voicemail from the LB Dubs little bug.
What's up, guys? It's Braden with the LBW. I have my question this week specifically for John. Big fan, bud. So my question is, what would you consider to be your greatest accomplishment as a maker? That can be a project, that can be something with your channels, you know, just whatever you're most proud of. Hope you guys have a great podcast. Hope you have a great night. See ya.
And before you answer, you cannot use being on this podcast as the answer. So what's your second most?
You can't. You guys give me 15 seconds to think about that then, because that was default. It's a great question.
Cut the audio
actually.
Here, and we're back. Yeah.
I'm going to go woodworking because it's no fun to always talk about content creation. My greatest achievement, or the thing I'm most proud of, when I found out we were having twins, of all things, over 5 years ago now, we were doing their nursery, and I decided I wanted to build something for them. So at the time, I had pretty rudimentary tools. I didn't have a shop. I was working out of the shed. I said, I'm going to build them a dresser. And I'd never done anything complex like drawers and frames and things like that. And again, I was working with a crappy miter saw on my porch. That was the max of my skill set at that time. But I managed to build a dresser for them, and it had drawers, and it actually worked, and it was reasonably square, and it was obviously emotional for me and sentimental because it was for my kids. I'm clearly not a sentimental person though, because last year when we remodeled our house, I actually gave it away to someone, but the memory is still there and I have pictures. So I was really proud of that at the time, and I think it proved to me and to people who are like, there's no way you can build that you don't need a shop, you don't need all these things. So never let that be a barrier of entry to anybody. Again, I built that on my porch. There's so many pictures of me assembling that in our kitchen at the time. And I had nothing other than, again, a crappy miter saw. Maybe I had a table saw at the time. I can't even remember. But you can build a lot of things even though you realize you can't.
Nice.
Or Dan, think you can't.
My greatest achievement... I think my greatest achievement is just what I've built this into. I mean, I know that's a really cop-out answer, but... You know, I started woodworking with almost, you know, no sense of any idea of what I was going to do with this because, as you all know, I was a photographer and the pandemic hit and that kind of put a damper on things. And, you know, I was like, maybe I'll just go out into the garage and woodwork because I had some tools and I had a garage. And, you know, just thinking about it now, you know, I got a guy that's working with me. I got, you know, a garage full of tools. It's not a garage anymore. It's a shop. I think that's my greatest achievement. I mean, what I've built it into. I know that's a really standard answer, but I can't think of anything else really. Mike, what about you?
We can't say like our kids or anything cheesy.
You can say whatever you want, Mike. The world is your oyster.
I mean, the best thing I've ever done
as a woodworker.
Oh, as a woodworker?
I mean, you worked some wood together.
He's made of wood. He's the Pinocchio.
He's the Pinocchio.
I made him with wood.
Yeah, I made him with wood, if you know what I'm saying.
That explains the nose.
No, I mean, my business. I mean, it's the thing I'm the most proud of outside of my son. I mean, it's a lot of hard work, and I'm proud of it. It's successful by some metrics, and I really love doing it. I think that's the best, most important thing is that I do the thing that I love, even when it's the most stressful, I mean, we've said this on the show before, but like the most stressful days doing this is better than the best days of working for someone else. So I love what I do and I'm really proud of it and it's going well and I want to keep going after that. So Pete,
For me, it's
figures.
action figures all the way. But it is along the same lines, but it's not just necessarily the business, but like the fact that like I started in a corner with a Ryobi, blue Ryobi tools back in the day with a miter saw, circular saw, and a bunch of hand tools. I bought that like 10 tool pack plus a miter saw and a Porter cable router. And like that's how it all started. And the fact that I have a shop that's better outfitted than some professional shops in my garage right now, and everything is paid for by what I do. All of it is paid off. If YouTube, Instagram, all of it just went away tomorrow, I'm still going to my shop on a weekend. I still have that place. I still have all of it. It's all incredible, and I don't regret any of it. And the fact that I've been able to build it to have these insane tools in my shop that I couldn't even fathom 5 years ago blows my mind. And on a subject of what like Dan and Mike said, like the fact that this is my business too, this is what's allowing my wife to not take on full-time work again after quitting teaching. Like she can come on and work with me and we can survive. We can pay our bills. We can save some money. We can like, we're going to be fine. That absolutely blows my mind. I've grown up in a 9-to-5 world. Like you work and then one day you die. There's not even retirement in there. That's always been my mentality. That's how I've been taught to work because I'm from Eastern Europe and you just learn to you work and then one day you die. So the fact that I can build a world that my parents can't even fathom, anytime I tell them about what's happening, they just don't understand it because it's so alien to them. And even to people in the US, the fact that I can say like, hey, I'm going to not work a permanent job forever. Like I'm working towards not working for someone. And some people can't even understand that. That blows my mind. And the fact that Dan and Mike are doing it every day, John's doing it now, is mind blowing. You know, and the fact that you can turn your passion into a full-time gig and your entire world, and you don't maybe necessarily have to work 40 hours a week, or you work more or less, doesn't matter, whatever you love.
Way more.
Or whatever, but if you enjoy it, yes. It's honestly 80 hours in something you love does not feel like 80 hours. But 10 hours, one day in my job on the worst day feels like I've been working for a month. It's the worst. So that being said, the fact that we're all able to build our passions into a business and something we can do, and even if it went away tomorrow, we're not left with nothing, is incredible. So sorry, didn't mean to get too deep on that, but just tier. Yeah, tier. Yeah, it's awesome that we've built this, all of us.
I don't like it. It's not impressive.
I hate it.
That was getting too serious.
All right, can the next question be like from someone from another country just to get a different perspective?
I got great news, Pete. You're going to want to sit down. This one is from France.
And all the girlies say I'm pretty fly for
French
guy.
Hey, guys. All right, John. I saw in one of your video a prompter fail. And I thought, a prompter? Interesting. Does it mean you follow a scenario when you make a video? Or you make a project and then piece it together? From the video of yours I'm watching, you have to plan everything first, right? By the way, how was my accent? Better? Alright, thanks, bad guy.
Thomas, you're the best, we love you. John, are you planning all your videos or something crazy like that?
Thomas onto something. First of all, Thomas, you sound delightful.
Thomas, don't ever try to change your accent for us. We love it.
Yeah, we love it.
Yeah, again, he's onto something. I do script my videos a touch, as in every word, comma,
sellout
phrase. Yeah, I'm pretty boring. I don't have the skill to just speak extemporaneously like most people, and then it sounds coherent. I also repeat myself over and over again. I have words that I latch onto. So I find it's easiest for me to script it. And I do read off of a teleprompter. I was really against teleprompters, but I believe it was Steve Ramsey. I heard an interview saying that he does them. And what I found helped me, because a lot of my videos are talking head, is the editing is significantly faster. I don't need to go chop together three sentences that I used to take 10 minutes to say because I was trying to hit a very particular point and I couldn't get it. Now I just read off the teleprompter. It is a skill that you have to develop to make it look somewhat natural. And I hide it with B-roll constantly.
It looks so natural.
But I do read a teleprompter. If anyone's getting into Talking Head style videos, or even not Talking Head, if they just want to have moments where they're talking to the camera, I would highly recommend getting one. It will save you a lot of time. And I also recommend planning your videos out. You don't have to write a word-for-word script like I do. I'm a maniac. But having some sense of an outline can't hurt.
Well,
it definitely something's makes working. The process goes smoother too. I mean, when you have, and you can like, when you look at it, I mean, I just started doing this, so I'm not speaking from a ton of experience, but writing like an outline and have something to follow, it also saves you a ton of time. You're not bouncing between processes and like, where was I? If you can go down a checklist and like, okay, we already hit this, we hit this. It really has helped for what Peter and I are doing, just filming. It's just so much smoother now having that outlined. And that's like our and not to answer John, this is John's answer. He gave his answer. But what we're doing now is like, I come up with a video outline and I send it to Peter, and then Peter hits it from the perspective of the viewer. Like, this doesn't even make sense. Like, what are you talking about for this part for? Like, that's, oh yeah. Sometimes I forget, like, people don't, the viewer doesn't really even, I do production furniture, so I don't even think like some of these things. I just think they're just normal daily things that people do. Well, they're not anymore. Like, I'm kind of outside of that thought process. Like, someone would be like, well, how are you milling? I'm like, well, you do the face grain and then the edge grain. And I'm like, oh yeah, I guess if you don't know, you don't actually know that. So I kind of forget about those things. And having someone like bounce that off of where you're like, oh yeah, that's right. That's not something that everybody just knows. That's something that I know because I do it all day long.
Like, I think that's a really good point. Probably should have touched on that earlier. Probably one of the biggest missteps that people make when they're starting out is not having someone or some ones to bounce your ideas off of. I think people just try and go it alone, or they bounce it off of the wrong person. Someone who just says, oh, that's great. Nice job.
That's great. That's great. Cool. Yeah. No critique is not helping you at all. Yeah. Like, you need people who will constructively criticize what you're doing, like actively being like, hey, I don't think that's actually going to land. Cause then if you keep coming up an idea and no one's telling you it's not a good idea, and you just start thinking you're really good at making these ideas and you're just actually really bad at them, it's not helping you at all.
Like, I am really good at this.
Yeah, exactly.
That's everybody nice. Tells me.
Exactly.
Oh, you're so crazy.
Exactly. That's such a good response. Exactly.
We generally have a call, though, we being my two buddies, Scott and Suman. So once I get a script done or they get a script, we have a call and we'll just review the entire script together. And
that's cool.
And we're pretty blunt with one another. We have no problem saying that is a horrible idea. Cut it. Like, if you're going to just beat around the bush and, again, tell people what they want to hear, you're wasting their time. So we will pick apart one another's scripts and we'll spend a solid hour plus going through each one of them.
I've started doing that with two other YouTubers as well. We're doing the same thing. Like, when we come up with video outlines, we're like, this is like, we're really trying to be hypercritical. Yeah. And really the thing that I'm bad about is being concise. Cause I ramble. Cause I have all this stuff I want to tell people about woodworking, and I need to stop doing that. I need to keep it simple. I also start saying things to like
kiss,
negate negative comments. Like, I'll start going into it and it's like, I need to stop doing that. Like, I don't need to try to anticipate negative comments about the content. I just don't need to worry about that. Just make the content and get it out and let them argue it out in the comment section or whatever it is. So anyway, that's some super good insights, John. Thanks, man. Really appreciate it. Yeah.
No, I have Dan nothing to.
You guys want to talk about that?
No.
I have a 20-minute rebuttal.
Perfect.
No. No, I agree. I agree. And John, you and Mike were talking about, like, it is very important because, like, the more high-end your woodworking technique gets, I think the more you niche down. So, like, John, you tend to do a lot of, like, Domino versus this entry-level tool versus this high-end level tool. Like, Scotty did the different joinery methods, and where you talked about, like, the Dowling jig versus Domino, all that stuff. Like, you're really opening up you're only casting a wider net by, I don't want to say dumbing it down, but kind of dumbing it down. Like, by going to the basics. Well,
I don't think dumbing it down is the right phrase.
It's not dumbing it down, yeah. But like,
but yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, making it relatable, like
making it more layman friendly.
Sure. Yeah. Right. More Rhode Island friendly. So like you want to make sure that anyone can understand it. And I think that there is some, there is a lot of people that want to watch that kind of content. But I think this is going back to Mary's question. Like, you kind of want to fill the role of maybe the woodworking content creator. And like, you don't want to show that you're Craig jigging a whole project together. You know, people get in their heads about that. And I used to be that way too. And I was like, oh, I don't want to show that. That seems really lame. Everyone knows that. Like, no, everyone I talk to knows that because we use different tools. But most of the world thinks that the Craig jig is like the best thing ever, which it really is. It's great. You know, and that's just one example I'm using here. But like, I said dumbing it down, but it's really not dumbing it down. Some people might think of it as,
We know what you mean. We know what you mean.
It might seem like you're dumbing it down, but you're dumbing it down for like the high-end furniture makers. Anyways, that's my thought on it. Do we have any other questions?
That's it. That's it for questions.
That's it.
We can actually wrap this thing up, I suppose.
We only had two call-in questions?
Only had two call-ins and we had two write-ins.
All right.
Yeah, it's a good week.
That's all right.
John, thanks for coming.
Man, never really had any time to talk to you before. This is really great for myself personally. It's really great talking to you, man. It's really great having you on the show. Really appreciate you taking time and giving us your, I would say, unique insight to the YouTube platform. So we really appreciate it. Thank you for all the good information. We will be back next week with another new episode of Another Woodshop Podcast. Check all of us out on our respective platforms. That's all of them, really. Go check out John at Lincoln Street Woodworks over on YouTube if you don't already. That is a channel you want to keep your eyes on because he's crushing it over there. And then check him out on Instagram. And are you on Facebook? You doing TikTok, any of that silly stuff?
Just YouTube. Forget the other ones.
Are you on Be Real?
Don't worry about the other ones. John only cares about YouTube. That's Twitter. Smart man. Focus on that. He's on Grindr. Anyway, go check out the show will be live this weekend for everyone. And Dan will have it up for the patrons soon. And we'll be back next week. Thank you, everyone. We appreciate all your support. Have a good one. Bye-bye-bye.
Bye-bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Love you long time.
Rhode Island sucks. Done.